Hello, everyone. I'm Michael Karasik, the author of The Bible's Many Voices, and this is episode 10 of The Bible's Many Voices companion podcast, Why Was the Temple Destroyed? One of the major episodes in the Bible, and for good reason, of course, as I've said in the introduction to the book, and we talked about in earlier episodes of the podcast, the saving of Jerusalem in 701 BCE and its destruction in 586 BCE both probably contributed to the fact that there is a Bible at all. So why the temple was destroyed, you would think would be a major focus of attention in the Bible, and indeed it is. But you might also think that the Bible tells you exactly why the temple was destroyed in so many words once and for all, and that's not actually what happens. There are a number of different voices in the Bible saying different things about why the temple in Jerusalem was destroyed. It obviously is a question that calls for an answer. If you are a god and some other team comes in and burns down your house, how good a god are you? So that's a question that needs to be answered, but the Bible answers it in a number of different ways. So if you begin on page 55 of the book and see what the Book of Kings says, in 2 Kings 24, it's a totally straightforward news at 11 journalistic description of what happened. It's politics, it's military. Zedekiah rebelled against the king of Babylon. King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon and the army reached Jerusalem, camped there, and built a siege ramp. And then, on the seventh day of the fifth month, in the 19th year of King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, an underling of the king of Babylon, Nebuzaradan, arrived in Jerusalem. He burned down the temple of the Lord, the king's palace, and all the houses of Jerusalem. If you know your Middle East in ancient days and today, it is in the very narrow strip of land that is fertile and not desert, in between Egypt on the southwest and whatever superpower is on the northeast, in Turkey, that would have been the Hittites, or in Syria, or in Iraq, or eventually even in Iran, Babylonia and Assyria and Persia in biblical times. And if you are living in Israel, you have to balance your relationships with those two superpowers, certainly in ancient Israel, and it's probably true in modern Israel too. You've got to balance your relationships with the power on one side of you and the power on the other side of you. And the people in Jerusalem at the beginning of the 6th century BCE were not very good at that, or were not very bright about the need to do that. And Zedekiah failed to send in his tribute money to Babylonia and was playing footsie with the current pharaoh. And at some point, the Babylonians decided that enough was enough. They came down to Jerusalem. They grabbed a whole bunch of people and took them hostage in the year 597, including the prophet Ezekiel. As I told you last time, we will come back to Ezekiel and his pal Jeremiah when we look at prophetic voices in the Bible. But then they had to come back again in 586 BCE, and they decided that's the last time we're doing this. We're going to smash them and set up our own government. And in 586 BC, Jerusalem and the temple inside it were destroyed. And 2 Kings 24 and 25 just say in plain Hebrew, this was a political military development. The bad guys came in, they conquered the city, and burned down the temple. But 2 Kings 17, which tells about the destruction a century and a half before of the northern kingdom based in Samaria, the west bank of today's newspaper maps, says that, but also goes on to say something a little bit different. They explain the politico-military situation. It was the Assyrians rather than Babylonians a century and a half before Jerusalem fell in 722 BCE. But in that story, they explain, this is 2 Kings 17, verse 7, this was because the Israelites had sinned against their God, who had brought them up from the land of Egypt. They worshipped other gods and followed the laws of the nations whom the Lord had dispossessed on their behalf, which the kings of Israel had reintroduced. The kings of Israel, like King Ahab and his wife Jezebel, had brought idolatry to the country, and that is why the northern kingdom, the kingdom that was called the Kingdom of Israel at that point in history, was destroyed, and the tribes that lived there became the 10 lost tribes. The Assyrians shipped them out to parts unknown, where they became the Kurds and the Armenians and who knows who all else. And there was a perfectly good journalistic reason for it, but the underlying reason was that they had sinned by committing idolatry, and they were being punished for their sin. And verse 13 in that chapter adds the words, not just Israel, the Lord warned Israel through each of his prophets, turn back from your wicked ways, but the Lord warned Israel and Judah. So Judah is going to be facing this same problem in a century and a half. Not, as we first thought from 2 Kings 24 and 25, not just a political event, the destruction of the temple, but a theological event. The Lord punished the Israelites for their sin of idolatry. And here we are in Jeremiah 44. We're going to come back to Jeremiah as well in the prophetic voices chapter, but for now you should know that the opposite of Ezekiel, who was seized by the Babylonians and taken to Babylonia in 597 as a hostage, Jeremiah was grabbed by some of the refugees in 586, and he was taken down to Egypt. But here's what he says in Jeremiah 44, quoting the Lord, "You have seen all the evil that I brought on Jerusalem and on all the other cities of Judah. They lie in ruins to this very day, and no one inhabits them as a result of the evil things they did to irritate me, going to offer sacrifices and worship other gods whom they had not known, they being you and your ancestors. So my hot anger was poured out against the towns of Judah and the streets of Jerusalem and burnt them. They became a desolate ruin, as they are to this day." So God's anger, which actually was mentioned in 2 Kings 17, was not a metaphor. God destroyed the temple himself because he went postal. If you can imagine being God and watching the people who are supposed to be worshiping you doing all sorts of crazy, goofy rituals to other gods and their idols, I could see how that could annoy you. But in that same chapter of Jeremiah, the people who dragged him down to Egypt with them also have a theological explanation for why the temple was destroyed, but it is a very different explanation. Starting with Jeremiah 44:16, they say to him, "What you told us, quote unquote, in the name of the Lord, we're not going to listen to you. No, we're going to do everything we promised about making offerings to the Queen of Heaven and pouring libations to her, just as we and our ancestors used to do, and our kings and officials too, in the towns of Judah and the streets of Jerusalem. We had plenty to eat. We lived well and never saw misfortune. But ever since we stopped making offerings to the Queen of Heaven and pouring libations to her, we have lacked everything, and war and famine have practically finished us off." In the year 622 BCE, a Torah scroll, or a scroll of Torah, probably a version of today's book of Deuteronomy, was found in the temple in Jerusalem, and King Josiah decided to clean up the religious behavior of the Israelites and enacted all sorts of reforms that cracked down on idolatry. And these people are saying, it's not because we committed idolatry that the temple was destroyed. It's because you stopped us that the temple was destroyed. And I don't know if you could tell it from my voice or if you know it from what you know of the Bible, but when they said they were pouring libations to the Queen of Heaven in the towns of Judah and the streets of Jerusalem, they are throwing Jeremiah's words back at him. Famous quotation to those who attend Jewish weddings, where it's often sung, Be'are Yehuda uvechutzot Yerushalayim, Jeremiah used that as a catchphrase, the towns of Judah and the streets of Jerusalem, and they are quoting his words back at him and throwing them back at his face. And Jeremiah replies to them in that same chapter, Jeremiah 44, verse 21. He says, yeah, those offerings you and your ancestors presented in the towns of Judah and the streets of Jerusalem, your kings, your officials, and all the people of the land, oh yeah, the Lord noticed them. He kept them in mind. When he could no longer stand the wickedness of the abominations you practiced, your land became a desolate, uninhabited ruin and a curse, as it is to this day. So Jeremiah 44 is actually presenting two sides to the argument. It's a reasonable presumption that the Bible being the Bible, they want you to believe Jeremiah and not the other guys. But there's certainly no argumentation here. What's happening in that chapter is that they all agree that the people were sacrificing to the Queen of Heaven, and they are arguing about the fact that either the temple was destroyed because they were sacrificing to the Queen of Heaven, or it was destroyed because King Josiah made them stop offering sacrifices to the Queen of Heaven, and she's the one who got mad and destroyed the temple in Jerusalem. Well, spoiler warning, 70 years after the destruction, there's going to be another temple in Jerusalem. A second temple will be built. And here's how that happened. As the Israelites, or the Judeans, I think they would be called by that time, explain to King Darius, via a Persian commission of inquiry in Ezra 5, they explain, "We, the servants of the God of heaven and earth," notice they don't call him by his four-letter tetragrammaton name, they just say he's the God who created heaven and earth, "we're rebuilding the temple that was originally built these many years ago. A great king of Israel completed the building of it, but because our ancestors angered the God of heaven, he handed them over to King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, who demolished that temple and deported the people to Babylonia. But in the first year of King Cyrus of Babylon, King Cyrus issued an order to rebuild that temple of God." Well, King Cyrus himself had said something of the sort in his decree that we read about at the end of the book of Chronicles and the beginning of the book of Ezra, and we read it again in the voice of another prophet, Isaiah of chapter 45. Isaiah, starting in chapter 40, is not Isaiah of Jerusalem, whom we learned about during the siege of Jerusalem by Sennacherib in 701 BCE. This is a prophet who is living 150 years later, almost 200 years later, in the time of Cyrus. Isaiah 45 begins this way, "Thus said the Lord to Cyrus, his anointed one," in Hebrew, Mishiho, his Messiah. Yes, you heard that right. King Cyrus of Persia is being called by the Lord his Messiah. He is the one who arranges for the Israelites to go back and rebuild that temple. So the temple's destruction of the temple is not merely explained both politically and theologically, so is the rebuilding of the temple. But in the book of Chronicles, in the part that we did not read just before the end of the book of Chronicles, there's another explanation for why the temple was destroyed, or a two-part explanation for why the temple was destroyed. "The Babylonians burned down the temple and exiled the survivors to Babylonia," starting now at 2 Chronicles 36:21, "to fulfill the word of the Lord in the mouth of Jeremiah." And what did Jeremiah say at the beginning of Jeremiah 25? "This country shall become a destroyed wasteland, and these peoples shall serve the king of Babylon for 70 years. So our final explanation of why the temple was destroyed is that it was destroyed in order to fulfill the word of the prophet who claimed it was going to be. If you keep sending prophets who say stuff that doesn't happen, people are going to stop listening to you. So the prophet can only cry wolf so many times before you, the God who sent the prophet, has to also send the wolf if you want to be taken seriously, and that's what happened. But why did the prophet make that threat? Chronicles verse 21 goes on to explain it had to be destroyed until the land had made up for its Sabbaths. So let's go now, if you will come with me for one more quick moment, to Leviticus 25. Leviticus 25 is the chapter of the Jubilee, the chapter that has a wonderful verse inscribed on a bell a few blocks here from Bible's Many Voices headquarters, called the Liberty Bell. Leviticus 25, verse 10, "You shall proclaim release throughout the land for all its inhabitants." You probably know the King James English translation of that verse, which is the one that is inscribed on the bell. When does that happen? During the Jubilee, the 50th year, when everything about the monopoly game of ancient Israelite capitalism was set back to zero. Everybody started out with exactly what their families had been given when they first got to Israel after leaving the wilderness, and then capitalism could start again. But every 50 years, the game is reset to zero. And why every 50 years? Because as the beginning of Leviticus 25 says, starting with the middle of verse 2 here, when you get to the land that I'm giving you, the land must Sabbath. The land must rest as a Sabbath to the Lord. Plant your fields for 6 years, take care of your vineyards for 6 years, and gather your produce. And in the seventh year, it's a Sabbath of Sabbaths to the land, a Sabbath to the Lord. Don't sow your fields, don't prune your vines, just collect whatever the land produces without your working, and it belongs to everyone, not just to you, but to your servants and to the animals who live there. And the book of Chronicles explains why Jeremiah made his threat. The land had to be given 70 years to rest, 1 year for each of the 70 years during the past 490 years that the Israelites had not let the land rest. That's why the temple in Jerusalem was destroyed, so that the Israelites could be sent away and so that the land could get all the sleep it had missed during the sabbatical years that were not fulfilled for almost half a millennium. Again, I'm not saying that's the correct explanation. That is the explanation with which the Jewish Bible ends, and so it has left a big impression. But all the other explanations, including the one that stopping idolatry, that the fact that the Israelites stopped practicing idolatry is why the temple was destroyed, they're all found in the Bible. What are we going to do next time? In the next episode, I think it makes sense to stop asking why things happened and just see what the Bible says about what things actually happened, how the Bible tells the historical facts of the Israelites in their land. I will be back again on July 1st with episode 11. Until then, let me please remind you, if you like the podcast and or the book, please share them with your friends. I'll remind you also, you can go to the Bible's Many Voices website and click on the link, and you can bookmark it so you don't have to come to the website every time. You can let a little percentage of whatever you pay the people at Amazon go to me instead of to them. It does not increase your price at all, and that would be very helpful for me. So until next time, this is Michael Karasik saying thanks for your contributions. Thanks for shopping at Amazon on my behalf. Thanks for promoting the book and the podcast. And above all, thank you for listening.